When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
This is Best to the Nest, the podcast that is all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. And today, Marjorie, we're going to talk about big regrets. Dun, dun, dun. Was that this a good sound effect?
That's a great sound effect. But okay. this is a conversation that I might be a little uncomfortable in. So
really?
Yeah, this is interesting. This is interesting, but we'll get to that. But first,
let's thank our sponsors before we start talking about regrets. Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. This is the skincare regimen that we both use and we both love. And if you use Pour Moi, you won't regret taking great care of your skin. I can tell you that.
Well done, Elizabeth. It's affordable luxury skincare from France. Use code NEST, N-E-S-T, for an extra 20% off with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I. skincare.com.
And we also thank Visit Duluth, a trip to the North Shore you'll also never regret. Summer was trips up Minnesota's North Shore. Listen, you can make the most beautiful memories there. And the question is, what will your memories be made of? Find the cool side of summer with trip tips, inspiration, and lodging at visitduluth.com. Okay, Marjorie. Here we go. Tell us the inspiration here.
Well, we both came across this article, I think probably simultaneously. It was in Time Magazine. It was making the rounds everywhere. It was on Instagram. I think that's where I came across it. It's by R.O. Kwan, and she talks about her, when she goes out or she's in conversation, she talks about how she tells people, I'm not going to have children. Mm-hmm. And people will just very clearly say to her, they kind of dismiss her and say, yes, you will. Yes, you will. Like, just kind of say, of course.
You'll change your mind.
You'll change your mind. And she was talking about how annoying that is, number one. But then she started to sort of think about, do people who have children actually regret having had them? And in the article, she quotes a Gallup poll. Now, it said this is from her article. It said, in 2013, a Gallup poll asked Americans 45 and older how many kids they'd have if they could go back in time. 7% of the respondents with children said zero.
Whoa.
But then in 2023, a study estimated that up to 5 to 14% of parents in so-called developed countries, including the United States, regret their decision to have children. So between 5 to 14% regret their decision to have children. I was talking to somebody today, and they said exactly what the point of her article was, which is, that's low. Way higher. And I think this is so interesting. And then she goes on to write, and she said, most of the time, whether I hear it in passing quickly from a stranger at a literary event or late night from a beloved friend, this kind of revelation arises from a place of anguish. Some of these parents talk about feeling utterly alone, like villains past all imagining. Several have noted that, afraid of being judged, they decline to be candid with their own therapists. It's a taboo subject, one made all the more difficult, punitive, by the ubiquitous belief that people who feel as if they do either can't or ought not to exist. She's very much a literary writer.
That's a very literary way to write that. Ought.
Yes, it was.
If you're going to throw an ought in there, then you mean freaking business when it comes to writing. And that's the truth of the matter. So there you go.
She's thrown around an
R.O.
But I mean, I think that's really interesting, this idea that it's a taboo subject. And
for sure. It's like a taboo subject to also say like, hey, sometimes I fantasize about like murdering someone and like putting their body parts in a freezer. You know what? People don't really admit this kind of stuff. And if they admit it to their therapist, they might even get a call from the police. You know, these are deep, dark things, Marjorie. I'm just telling you that that's the stuff it's hard to talk about.
We are recording.
So when you thought that this was going to make you uncomfortable. Yeah, when you thought this conversation was going to make you uncomfortable, was that the direction, the serial killer part?
Now I'm super uncomfortable because how quickly chopping up people came to your mind. But that having been said, no, what makes me uncomfortable is a couple of things. One, it reminds me of how clear my mother used to express the fact that were she not Catholic, she probably wouldn't have had four children.
Shoot, and, man.
And I am the fourth. So I look at that. And, you know, it's funny. It never gave me, like, that didn't affect my self-esteem because I was so a part of a Catholic community where there was a lot of chatter about a lot of women having more babies than they wanted, to be honest.
Tough. I mean, so, and that's the thing. Like, I think the regret can stem from several, when I read this whole article, and as I've been sort of marinating on this over the last couple of days, I've thought about the multitude of reasons why someone might regret having children.
Right.
Now, number one, I would think that they had children with the wrong person.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
It's been a real, pardon my French, pain in the arse
for
the entire time that their children have been in existence. Because I can imagine I have children with the right person and I still find it challenging. Mm-hmm. And so if you had children with someone that then you don't want to continue being with for whatever reason, I mean, you have got to be in fight or flight stress mode 24 hours
all
a day.
The time.
And so I don't know if those people would necessarily that they regret having the children, but they certainly could say that they regret their choice of mate. And could they go back in time and not have had children with that particular person?
Yeah.
And I actually talked with a divorced friend of mine about this one time. And I sort of, in a cliche way, as we were talking about her divorce, because I clearly did not know how to say something normal, I said something totally stupid.
What did you say?
Which was, you know, like, she was basically just like, this relationship was a total waste of time. I never should have married him. And I said, well, you know, like the beauty of it is that you have your children. And she goes to me, I am sure that I would have had perfectly lovely children with someone else. And in the time, ooh, I was like a little bit taken aback. And I was also like, I kind of appreciated her honesty because it didn't mean that she's a wonderful mother.
Right.
She adores her children. But the choice of having children with that particular person was made so complicated for her and then leads to decades upon decades of still being tied to that person.
Oh, forever.
Even though you don't want to be. So that,
that
type of regret, I really have some empathy for.
Yeah, in the article, she goes on to say, and if she could inhabit the person she was before she came pregnant, so she's talking to one of the people she's interviewing, she said, the woman said, and this reminds me of the story you just told, she said, I would have stopped that pregnancy before it happened. But that's the part Helen's never said to her daughters, who, after all, didn't ask to be born.
Yeah.
She's hellbent on raising them well and not taking out any regrets on the girls. I love them. I just don't love the choice I made. Now that's...
Shoot. Yeah.
I mean, that's a good way to put it, but I can't help but imagine that if you really do regret, whether it's somebody regretting having children with the wrong person or regretting having them in general, I don't know how you raise them without somehow that seeping through. Although... I said at the beginning of the podcast, I mean, there was an element of that with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I mean, of all the things that she could have done better, that's the one that never bothered me. I actually sort of appreciated the honesty of it because, you know, she had me in the 60s. And so she was fighting for her place as a woman. She was fighting for respect within the church. She was fighting all of these battles and this idea that you couldn't take birth control. And she had four girls in 5 years.
Yeah. There's no way that you get through that without, I mean, I shouldn't say no way. I think there's a small percentage of the population that thrives in that. That's a very small percentage because it's difficult.
It's difficult. And I think so for me, when she would say something like that, by the time that was registering, I was a young woman, 12, 13 years old, who completely understands that.
Yeah.
I mean, and as somebody who even as a teenager understood that my body was my body and that the choices that I was going to make were my choices, it made me completely empathetic to a mother who was saying, my body wasn't my body and these were not my choices.
And well, so probably liberating for you to get that from her in some ways, because she was saying, if it wasn't for the Catholic Church, I wouldn't have done this. Essentially saying to you, you don't have to abide by what the Catholic Church says in that arena.
Oh, completely freeing. I mean, completely freeing, which brings us to another part of the article where the woman, the author talks about that young women and young men too are not given that option many times in conversations within families, that you're not given the option to say, it's okay if you don't want children. That doesn't make you a less nurturing person, a less loving person. It doesn't make you a monster because you don't want to procreate.
Right.
And I think that that's the other thing too, that I don't know that that conversation happens. And I wonder what your mom said to you about children.
What
pressures you felt?
I felt pressure to make money, always. I felt, because my parents had no money.
Right.
So the only pressure that I felt, and I really think it came from a good place. Yeah, I'm working through some of it, but like it came from a good place of, we don't want you to have to struggle as much as we are struggling.
Right.
Because, and my sisters, you know, it's interesting because the perspective changes so much between the oldest to the youngest. Like I was talking with my youngest sister about this and she doesn't really remember like things being so tight.
Right.
And I'm 5 years older than her. So I have five more years of remembering when things were so tight. I mean, my dad was a Lutheran minister. My mom stayed home. My dad was like a starting out Lutheran minister. Right. My mom stayed home until at one point she was like, I have to get a job or we won't even have money to have clothes. Like that's the point that we're at.
Right.
And so they would like pass me off in parking lots when my mom would go to work at the mall.
And that's why you remember that more. And I think, too, with the oldest child, I think this is true with the oldest. They're privy to being a part of the marital conversations more than the siblings that come behind.
Totally.
Because you and them for a while.
Yeah. And there's that observant factor where you can observe for a long time. There's a little bit of like a leadership factor. So you tend to kind of be a little bit more mature at your certain age. So that pressure was very big. It was very, I mean, I think very much like I don't think they expressly said this, but it was like, don't have kids before you have the means to make it a little bit easier on yourself.
Right. Right.
And so that was a big part of it. You know, it's so fascinating when you look back. I've been doing a lot of delving into like what your childhood financial things and like the messages you get about that and how that impacts you as an adult. But, that was the biggest. And so I didn't have a child until I was 33. Now, granted, I didn't get married until I was 32, but I could have married someone else before him. I was asked. I just declined at a certain point. So, you know, having kids young was not something that I was really interested in. And establishing myself in my career was really important to me.
Right.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about as I was driving today in the rain about this conversation was that there is nothing like children that will force you to really examine your own triggers and your own sort of shortcomings, because number one, you see yourself reflected in them, because they're like monkey see, monkey do. You know, they do what you do, not what you say.
Yeah.
And so you will hear them and see them do things, and you will be triggered by that. And I'm not, I don't think everybody who doesn't want to have children doesn't want to examine those things, but maybe realizes the gravity of examining those things. Or if you regret having children, you maybe found that process of those triggers very, very difficult and very overwhelming.
That's interesting. That's interesting too, is because it is difficult to parent, and it is difficult to have children. And it's a financial commitment.
$1,000 on gymnastics in the last 2 days is where I'm at. I mean, I'm not kidding. Just signed up for a camp and a team trial. And I was like, excuse me, what?
Yeah.
Wait.
Oh, please.
What?
Yeah, just summer, open up your hands and let the money flow out.
That's what I'm supposed to do to help neutralize my relationship with money. Money comes in, money goes out. That's my mantra.
Neutralize. But I think that there was an author that was interviewed. I watched it. It was on, I think it was on CBS Sunday Morning. And I don't even remember the author's name, but they were talking to him about the fact that he chose not to have children. And he chose not to get married and chose not to have children because he grew up in an abusive household.
Oh, yeah. See, and
he wanted to break the cycle. And I think the really cool thing about that, I feel really fortunate in when I married Ian and parenting with Ian, is we both came from different degrees of dysfunction. And we were really upfront about that early on. I mean, we were married very quickly, but we were very aware of those things and tried really hard with our children to break the patterns of that dysfunction. And our kids have been very sweet about the fact that they felt that we did that. But that was not easy. And I think that what you brought up is really interesting, is that for some people, they just, if their childhood wasn't happy, I hate to put that on, that somebody who decides not to have children didn't have a happy childhood. I'm not saying that. But no. I think there are many reasons why people don't. And I've shared it on the podcast before, that Ian's aunt and uncle came to us at our wedding and said, we chose not to have children, and it was the best decision we've ever made, and we've had a fabulous life. And they did. And so I think it's interesting when people, particularly parents, put pressure on their own children to have children. Like, I've never done with that with my children. Yeah. I've never said, give me a grandchild, ever.
It's not a decision that should be taken lightly. And I've shared with many people, like, I don't think that you should do it if you don't really, really want to do it. I mean, don't have children just because you think societally it's what you're supposed to do. That's a terrible reason to have a child. Right. Don't have a child if you think that your relationship isn't on solid ground. Because here's what a baby doesn't do: save a relationship. A baby makes a relationship 10 times harder. And that is just the matter-of-fact truth of it.
Yeah.
And all of those things I'm not saying aren't worth it, but, you know, I think it's very important to go into it eyes wide open and understanding what your trade-offs are going to be and understanding what you want your life to look like and some of the trials that you're willing to go through in order to get there. Because it's certainly not for the faint of heart. I was at a dinner party a few weeks ago with two other couples. And both of those couples don't have kids. Mm-hmm. One of them, I think more for fertility issues, and then was like, okay with not having kids. And then the other couple, I don't think ever wanted to have kids, but I don't know them as well. And it was really like quite refreshing to be at the dinner table, because it's sort of like the way that it goes when you're with people who have kids is you end up talking about all their kids, you know, like, tell me about the sports, what's going on. You're all complaining about the same thing. You're all like kind of like reading from the same script. And I was like, really having fascinating conversations that got very deep about all sorts of things that were going on in people's lives, because we didn't have the kids distracting us because nobody else had kids. And Jay and I went home, we drove home, and I was like, wasn't that like, first of all, it was a lovely dinner. It was wonderful. Right. And then also, like, wasn't that interesting? Because frankly, like, we hang out with people who don't have kids, but like, not often in that type of a setting.
Right.
It was.
Would it be snobby to say that you'll only be friends now with people who don't have children so that you can probably have the kind of conversations that you want to have?
Yeah, because then if I show them a picture or something, I don't have to see anybody else's. Just kidding. I love seeing people's pictures of their kids, and I love talking to them about their kids. But I do, you and I have a couple of mutual friends who have talked to us, who talked to me separately within a couple of weeks of saying, hey, have you ever thought about, which is always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Then I know it's like some sort of universe guiding. Have you ever thought about doing a podcast on people who, women who decide not to have children on purpose? And both of these women, we know, we're going to get them both on the podcast. I want to have them on the podcast together.
I think that's
great. To talk about that choice and about sort of the societal judgment that they feel. And I think, you know, people are in a tough spot if they say they don't have children. There's this pause, because I think as a culture, we've gotten really good at being sensitive to the understanding that many people are facing fertility issues in this country.
Right.
And so if you're immediately saying like, oh, it'll happen for you, or oh, blah, 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 you know, like, people don't do that. They stop, but then they have to navigate. And I don't know what the right way to say this is. Do you just drop it? Do you just say, oh, great? Or do you say, oh, is that a choice? Is that a choice that you made or not? I mean, that's not the right thing to say. What a dumb thing I just said.
I mean, my inclination is always just drop it. Just drop it. Like, or just
never
ask.
But then it's like, what if people want to share? I mean, and then I feel like the person, it's on the person, if they chose not to have children, it's on them to go, oh, no, and like make you feel okay. Oh, no, it's okay. We didn't want to have children.
Right.
Which that I feel like puts them on the like, why do you have to comfort me? Because I just got uncomfortable and made it all uncomfortable.
It's complicated. It's complicated. We want to thank our sponsors, of course, Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. It is affordable luxury skincare from France. The Climate Smart Rotating System is customized to where you live. That means Pour Moi is giving your skin what it needs to stay hydrated and healthy. I wake up in the morning and my skin feels so soft and glowy and hydrated. I just love it.
I think that's the biggest difference, Marjorie, that I notice with Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. I've been using this skincare line for 3 years. It's unlike anything else. I do not have days where I wake up and my skin is tight or oily, because my skin is supported and doing exactly what it needs to do to fit with the environment that it's in. Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare is proven for anti-aging results. Pour Moi creams and serums are clean, fragrance, and cruelty-free. And we've got a discount for you. Use the code NEST. You'll get an extra 20% off with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's pourmoiskincare.com. And visit Duluth.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring Best to the Nest. Oh my gosh, how much do I love Duluth? It is just one of my favorite places. Did you all know my first television job was in Duluth, Minnesota? I love visiting. It brings back so many memories. And anytime you can spend time in Duluth or up the North Shore, there's just something magical and majestic about it. When we talk about on Best to the Nest, just figuring out how to take a breather and how to slow down and be intentional, I find that there are fewer places that are more perfect for that than Duluth. And visitduluth.com is the perfect resource for you to plan your trip. Summer is coming up, and summer was made for trips up the North Shore. What will your memories be made of? That's a great question. You can find the cool side of summer with trip tips, inspiration, and lodging. You can get your whole trip planned at visitduluth.com.
I love that. I love Duluth. Beautiful, beautiful country. Okay, so I'm going to stop recording. I think one of the things, too, that the author goes into, she says, one problem is that our culture wants just one kind of story about parenting.
Yes.
And it's a story of pure joy.
Oh, yeah.
So this psychotherapist, she's from California, she says her clinical practice focuses on people who are adapting to parenthood. I love that. Actually, I could have really used a therapist in my 20s where it was about adapting to parenthood. I never thought of it that way, but all of my struggles of trying to balance career and my identity and children, adapting to parenthood is a nice sort of umbrella term for what that should have been in my 20s. That would have been very helpful.
I like that.
Yeah. She said, people often experience grief in the transition to being a parent, grief for the life they might have inhabited otherwise. Part of what makes the grief unspeakable is that there's always a strand of this regret.
Well,
and that's interesting. Okay, what does that well mean?
I don't agree with that, because I think you can have that grief without feeling regret, because I know I felt that. When I had Bernie, I felt total grief for the person that I was before. And I remember a specific moment.
Yeah.
And I remember when I wasn't able to plant my garden because I just couldn't do it. I had been back to work. You know, she was born in January. So I was wanting to plant the garden in May. She was 5 months old. I'd been back to work for 2 months. And I was like, there is no, I can barely even function. I was nursing.
Right.
I was doing like, then of course I'm like, figuring out baby food, like all this stuff. And there, I stared at the garden through the back. I can picture this out the back window of my old little sweet house. And I just cried because I looked at it and I was like, that I thought that person is gone.
She's gone.
She's gone. The person who just like had her sweet little dog in her cute little house and just did her thing and got out in the garden is gone. Because this is my new life.
Yeah.
And I had no perspective as a new parent on understanding the seasons and how it's just not that labor intensive for that long.
Right.
And I felt a lot of grief about that while at the same time not having any regret about her. I loved her wholly and fully and with my whole soul. But still felt grief. So I think you can certainly have it the other way. That you can feel that grief and have regret. I also think you can feel that grief and not have regret.
I would have to say I was like you. I definitely had the grief, but
yeah.
I was so happy to be I was so happy to be a mother after, because I miscarried my first
yeah,
time.
Me too.
So when I actually had my first little baby, there was no regret, but there was definitely some grief. Oh, this is perfect timing.
Speaking of a baby.
Yeah.
Look who just came in. You guys are listening
hey,
to this. You
buddy.
This is my third baby, who was, by the way, a surprise and the best surprise of my life. What do
Hi,
you think,
sweetie.
Dodo Bird? You bumped your head.
Downstairs.
Oh, on the railing downstairs. Where does it hurt? Can I give you a little smooch?
Yeah.
Oh, I love you.
I love you too.
Hey, listen. Can you give me 5 more minutes to wrap up with Marjorie and then I'll come downstairs and put you to bed? Oh, you can go to the bathroom right here.
Or he can stay and we'll just wrap up.
I know. He's so sweet. He has to go to the bathroom, guys. So there's a bathroom right behind me.
Perfect.
He's going to open the door. It's not going to go on YouTube because you won't be able to see it. Oh, hang on. He's going to, I got to open the door. Hold on. That's Marjorie. Can you see her?
Hi, sweetie. So this is real life. This is parenting right here. What did
he say? I want you to come visit us.
Oh, I am. I think I'm coming in August.
Oh my gosh.
I think so.
Oh, that's great.
I think
so. Okay, he's going to the bathroom.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Well, I think that I would agree with you. So part of what makes that grief unspeakable is that there's always a strand of this regret. And I think we both disagree with that. But I think, you know, if there is a strand of regret for you, that's just fine. And that's what this whole conversation was about. And this is what that article was about, is that people should be able to have this conversation. But because it's so taboo, they're lonely in their own thoughts. And that's a horrible place to be. That's a horrible place to be.
And you can look around and see a lot of people who probably shouldn't have had children. And whether or not they regret it is their own. But I think the bottom line is, societally, like, we just can't expect that everyone is supposed to procreate. whether it's just, can you hear the toilet flushing? Because that's what's happening here, guys.
Yeah, you know. I love that. He's three and he's flushing the toilet. I mean, that's job well done, Elizabeth.
That's a pretty good sound effect. You can't, we should have that. Good job, Dodo. I'll be right down. You should, we should have, okay, baby. I'll be right down. I love you. Okay.
Okay. So, you have such a good mother voice.
Oh,
In my own head, I'm thinking that's what I think my voice sounded like when I talked to my children.
Doesn't always sound like that. Sometimes
I like it. I
like no one listens to me. Why is no one listening to me? Sometimes it's more shrill like that. But, you know, being intentional, giving people the freedom to make the choice that's right for them. And hopefully raising emotionally mature, stable humans who then can make that choice for themselves without not raising like narcissists who then grow up and it's like, okay, now I had them and I look at them as like decoration for my life and not as people that I'm supposed to provide for and raise. It's about intention and choices and not just doing it because you think you're supposed to do it. That's the worst reason to do anything.
Right. And so my two final thoughts on this are, one, I love growing up Catholic. So if you're Catholic, please don't think I'm in any way saying something disparaging about the Catholic Church. The idea that Catholic women, many American Catholic women are now taking birth control. Many women I grew up with had families of 5, 6, 7, 8 children, and they were lovely families. I mean, if I ever thought that I could handle that, there is something really wonderful about big, loving Catholic families.
Oh, for sure.
That was not the case for my mother. My mother would have gone insane. So,
but there are lots of women who felt forced into having many, many children because of that. And I would say that most would say that, is that really the best thing that we should do for women? And should you pay Lutheran ministers more so their families aren't poverty-stricken when they're young?
I would say, having known so many Catholic women, I can't say most, and I won't say most because I don't know that. All I can speak for is my mother, and it was difficult for my mother. And
I think that's fair.
It made me very aware of my own body and my own choices, so I was grateful for that. But my experience within the Catholic Church, I am very grateful for it. I just want to say that. And then second, when I was at brunch with a bunch of grad students over the weekend, it was amazing how many of these young women were feeling pressure from their families to have children because mothers and fathers want grandchildren. And I found that really interesting because I think and I don't think that's uncommon. I don't think it's uncommon for women to say, oh, I want a grandbaby. I want a grandbaby. I just think that's a dangerous road to go down. To be trying to pressure young people to have kids, because it's daunting. It is a daunting task that I think, you know, I probably wasn't 100% ready for when I did it, but I'm grateful I did it when I did it. You felt more ready when you did it, and you're grateful you did it when you did it. But both of us would agree, and you can disagree with me here, that it was much harder than we thought it would be.
Oh, would you say that? Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would totally say that. Just the sleep deprivation alone is like mind-numbingly brutal. I know. I go too far when we do these podcasts at night because it's like, it's not good for me to do this stuff at night. I'm going to end up saying something I regret, Marjorie. I'm going to get myself canceled. I'm going to do something because I went serial killer and then mind-numbingly brutal.
Yeah, right off the bat.
You're going to edit those things out or are they going to stay in?
They're staying in, darling. Okay. They're staying in.
And along the toilet flush, is that staying in too?
Totally staying in. 100%. It's, you know, 100%.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I 100% agree. I just don't think that you should be pressured into it. Although, you know, then my surprise third baby that came up here, what's kind of interesting about that is that when I said to people, I am pregnant with a third baby, and it was a surprise.
Right.
This was an unplanned situation.
Right.
And
a night of passion.
Okay, I'm sure it was. That many people who had two kids would tell me that they regretted not having a third. And no one who had a third, except for one, person told me that they sort of regretted having a third. And that third had some challenges that were very difficult. And, you know, her words sort of echoed in my brain a lot, but everybody else said, like, we should have gone for the third. Like, we should have just done it. We were so overwhelmed with two. We felt like our world was crashing down. We were like, we can't even make it through another day. We should have just done it because we would have gotten through it. And then on the other side of those hard, really labor intensive years, we would have loved it. So then, so isn't that funny? I mean,
and I never regretted not having more. I thought I only wanted to have one. Ian really wanted a bigger family, so we sort of compromised on two. And I'm really glad I stopped. Ian could have easily
had more nights of passion.
Had more nights of passion, if we're going to put it that way.
You're the one who did it.
I think the in our family, the ones who regret most the fact that we didn't have more children are my children.
Oh,
I think they would have liked to have more siblings.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. But but that's
I don't regret that much. I mean, there were a few nights of drinking too much I regret. What's your biggest regret before we go?
What's my biggest regret?
Do you have a biggest regret?
Oh my God, that's such a big question.
I think I regret like early in my career thinking that like I wasn't smart enough to ask questions or, you know, just, I wish I would have been, which I don't know. I mean, I just wish that I wouldn't have been like overthinking and so nervous and so like obsessing over the next thing. But maybe that's what I needed to get where I am. So I don't know if I would call it a regret, but I feel like I could have saved myself some strife.
I regret every decision I've made out of fear.
Oh.
Every decision that I've made out of fear. I just, and I, when something happens that you most feared, you know, in losing my husband, the difference now is I'm pretty fearless.
Boy.
Because that's done. And so when I look back at my life, I think, what was I so afraid of? Because what I didn't even conceive to be afraid of has happened.
Yeah.
So it just makes you, you know, when I'm trying to figure out, like, how do you move forward? It's like, well, that one's done. I'm not going to be afraid of things that I shouldn't be afraid of. I used to be afraid of going on stage. I used to be afraid of, I mean, name the small things. I was afraid to do television. When I first started out as a producer, my news director was like, you should be on the air. And I was petrified. I'm like, no, I'm going to stay behind the camera. I'm going to stay behind the camera. I want to produce. I love producing. What difference did it make?
No.
I was afraid. So I made that decision out of fear. And I've sort of told myself, I'm not going to do that anymore.
So. That's really great. Just don't jump out of planes or do something like that, though.
Oh, no. I'm not stupid.
That okay. You are not.
Okay, to anybody who jumps out of planes, I'm not saying you're stupid, but that
the
is
one thing you're afraid of is offending people. You're not going to offend. Don't worry.
Don't worry about it. Don't be afraid.
Late night. This is after dark. We can put a special warning on the beginning of these podcasts. We'll start it with, welcome to Best to the Nest. This podcast was recorded post 9 p.m. Please excuse approximately 25% of the content that will clearly go off the rails and ride the line as inappropriate and offensive to many, if not all, groups of people.
You have to do me one favor and then we have to go because now it is a little off the rails.
I know.
Just because you have such a beautiful voice. So I want you to say in your sexiest voice,
ooh,
welcome to Best to the Nest After Dark.
Welcome to Best to the Nest After Dark.
Okay, that makes me so happy. Thank you.
You can isolate that. Turn that into some sort of meme.
If you're enjoying this podcast as much as I am, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a review at Apple Podcasts.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best to the Nest or go to besttothenest.com. We are now on YouTube. No actual video yet, but we have a channel. It'll be coming soon. Subscribe today. We are the podcast that brings you home. Good night.